expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Link Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB, our number 404-872-0750. Go to the website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Sign up for our free weekly newsletter. Get valuable information you cannot get anywhere else, just in our newsletter. It's free. You get it every Thursday morning, right to your inbox. ThinkGlink.com. Last week, we talked about the $26 billion foreclosure settlement that finally got approved. Months, if not years in the making, the five big banks all caved, went into the foreclosure settlement with the end goal of finally being able to process millions of foreclosures that have just been sort of hanging out there. People who have been in their homes not paying anything for as long as 3 years in some states. And it's stressful for everybody. The banks haven't been able to process the foreclosures. Homeowners haven't been able to get on with their lives. It's been crazy. And I told you last week it was a watershed week. We're going to look back and say the acceptance of this $26 billion foreclosure settlement is going to be the turning point for where we're going to start seeing the bottoming out of the housing crisis. We are going to start to climb back. And to get there, if you haven't been paying your mortgage, they are going to come for you. Your lender wants your house. They want you out. And you should welcome this because it's time to start fresh. I'm going to take it a step farther today, because a new study shows that 1 in 10 children are directly affected by the foreclosure crisis in this country. 1 in 10. That's an average. North Dakota, where they've hardly had any foreclosures, it's a lot less. But here in Atlanta, in Georgia, in some of the other states, it's going to be as many as 1 in 5. 20% of all children in some states are going to be directly affected by foreclosure, and millions of them already have been. 8 million children, by the time this is over, will be directly affected. 2.3 million children have already lost their homes. And it occurred to me this week, as I was reading this study, that we are ruining two generations of children. The toddlers who are feeling the stress in the house are so freaked out about what's happening. They know mom and dad are really stressed out. They don't know why, right? It's that generation. They don't even know how to put words to it. And then you have the teenagers, right, the 10, 15 years older than them, who feel like their world is coming apart and they can't even help and they don't know what to do. And the health, education, emotional stability of our next two generations is at risk because of this. It isn't just about the money. It isn't just about a house. It's about their lives and how they are going to be scarred going forward. This has been, when I look back from 2007, when we would be on the air and I was telling you that I was sensing it was all coming apart. And I don't know if you'll remember this. We had a call from a guy who said he owned a Lexus dealer. And he said, Elise, you're nuts. It's my best year ever. Everything is going great. Can't be at the edge of the precipice. Can't be. Everything is going really, really well. And yet, it wasn't really going well, right? Because everybody else who was calling the show was telling a different story. They were telling a story of how they weren't able to make it work anymore. The housing payments had gotten too high. The 100% mortgages weren't working. The idea that you could make $50,000 and afford a $500,000 house, the math was catching up. The reality was catching up. And here we are, 5 years later, and now it's not just mom and dad or grandma and Aunt Sue, right? Now it's the kids. It's two generations of kids. I suppose technically they're one big generation, but it's two generations of kids whose health, education, emotional stability are going to be damaged by this, have already been damaged, scarred for life. You have to act now. And I know there are so many people who are out there, and you're scared you're going to lose your house. And you're scared about what's happening to your kids. You see what's happening to them. You see they're not sleeping that well at night. You see they don't really want to eat. They're clingy. I know when my kids were scared, when they were little, oh my gosh, it was like I had two big weights attached to my legs. We would walk around the house and they were kind of standing on my shoes, right? Alex and Michael. And that's when kids are scared. They want more of you, and they're understandably caught up in this horrible reality, and you don't know how to calm them because you don't know how to calm yourself. It's like your heart is just beating out of your chest, and every time the phone rings, it's like boom, 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 right? You hear it in your ears. It's terrifying. And they know. The kids know, and you know. And I was reading this study this week on the ongoing impact, and I'm reading about how Nevada is leading the country in children affected by foreclosure. 20% of all homeowners with kids, it's 20%. Florida, 15%. Arizona, 14%. California, 12% of all children. 1 in 10. And I think to myself, we have to fix this sooner rather than later. We have to take our stand. And part of that is owning up to what your financial reality is. Part of that is opening your eyes and saying, it's time to look in the mirror. It's time to see where I'm at. It's time to stop thinking that the housing market is going to come back and suddenly, magically, you're going to be out of being underwater. You're going to be back to basics. You're going to be back to even. I know that's what you're thinking. Everybody who calls the show, the number one question on the show is, when are housing prices coming back? The number one question in my email box, how fast will housing prices bounce back? Everybody looks at the stock market, and in 2007, we were talking about how the stock market was at 6,600, and everybody, 2008, 2009, we were terrified. Our 401ks were gone, evaporated, housing values were starting to fall. And then magically almost, the stock market has come back. We're now at twice where we were. The way Wall Street counts, that's 100% improvement. I don't know about your 401k. My 401k isn't quite back there. My 529 college savings plan, not quite back there. Housing prices move differently. Housing prices never bounce back at the speed of light. Stock market went down 1,000 points and back in a day, right? There was some sort of flash panic trading thing that they're still trying to figure out how that happened. You're not going to see housing values move up 20% in a day. It's just not going to happen. The slow climb back is based on something far bigger than computerized trading options, right? Housing values, when they are the most true, are based on salary. They're based on what people earn. If you just wipe out the years of 1999 to 2006, when anybody with a pulse could get any size loan, you would understand that housing prices and jobs, housing jobs, real estate jobs, tied together, right? And so until the jobs come back and the incomes comes back, your housing values aren't going to come back, and they're not going to come roaring back anyway. And so if you're in this position and you know you haven't made your mortgage payment and you know your kids are directly affected, it's time to decide what you're going to do. You know, on this show, sometimes people say, Elise, you're too nice to people. You forgive people too much. You really should slap them on the side of the head and say, hey, you're not making your mortgage payment, get out. But you know what? It's really hard to get out. It's hard because you just want the life that you've built. You want the roots that you've planted. My whole world fell apart when our neighbors of 13 years last year moved a half a mile away. The life that I had built with them, that Sam and I and the boys and their kids had built together of casual Sunday afternoon barbecues and last minute sharing a bottle of wine on the porch on a Wednesday night, that life disappeared. Yes, they're a half a mile away, but it's not like living next door. And so when you plant roots in a community and when you have lived in a house and raised your children, and you've got marks on the walls to measure their growth, it's hard to just sit, move. It's hard to pick up. It's hard to pack up. And yet that's exactly what has to happen for us to process the foreclosures that are coming. And they're coming in a huge wave. They're going to come fast and furious, and housing prices are going to go down before they go up. In Georgia, in Atlanta, in your neighborhood, they're going down, and then they're going to go up again. And they're not going to go up the speed of light. And so when people call and say, what if I just managed to hold out another 2 or 3 years? Is that going to be enough time? Am I going to be able to get there? And the answer is, I don't think so. Because what's happening now, the rebuilding that has to take place, the rebuilding of our families and our children and their security and our security is going to take maybe 10 years. 20 years in some neighborhoods. It could take a really long time. And so I read this report, and I will include a link to the report in my newsletter this week. So sign up for the newsletter, get a link to the report, read it for yourself. 8 million children, 1 in 10, are going to be affected by this foreclosure crisis. A third of those have already been affected. What does that tell you? Two-thirds have yet to be affected. Two-thirds of all the foreclosures that we're going to have in this recession are about to happen. They haven't even happened yet. And I'm not trying to scare you. What I'm trying to do is say, look in the mirror and decide where you need to go, because this is the opportunity to rebuild. This is your opportunity to draw a line in the sand and move forward. Take a forward-facing step. And that's what I want all of us to do. 404-872-0750 is our number here on the show, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We are taking your calls. Lines are wide open. 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Time at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. It is 25 minutes past the hour. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, the website thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget, we tweet live during the show. I am on Twitter. It's at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. We're talking about how 5 years into the foreclosure crisis, many American families with kids are continuing to lose their homes through foreclosure. And a study that I read this week from the Brookings Institute shows that an estimated 2.3 million children in single-family homes have already lost their homes to foreclosure. And another 3 million children are at serious risk of losing their homes in the future. And another 2.3 million children have already lost their homes. So we have children in rental homes that went into foreclosure where the owner stopped making payments. The parents were making rental payments, and then they see when they come home one day, and there's a piece of paper tacked to the door saying the home's in foreclosure. And if your kids are old enough to read, they know what that says. It's terrifying. And then 2.3 million children, their parents own their home and lost it to foreclosure. And another 3 million children are at risk of it. And so 8 million children, 1 in 10, directly affected by ongoing foreclosure. And, my feeling is their health, their education, their emotional stability is at risk. And this is our next two generations of kids. Next hour, we're going to talk about the flip side, the rebuilding, and why I think this is the single best opportunity in the next 50 years to buy these foreclosures and what you can do to make that happen for you. 27 minutes past the hour. We're taking your calls as well about this and other real estate issues. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to News Talk WSB.
Expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show live on Sundays, 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, the website thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for my free weekly newsletter at thinklink.com. In it, we're going to put a link to the ongoing impact of foreclosure on children. It's a new study that's out this week from the Brookings Institute. I tweeted about this online just now, just before the break, and it's already been retweeted a whole bunch of times. There's just, the idea that 1 in 10 children are affected by foreclosures is just an crazy number. 404-872-0750. Let's go to the phones. Truck joins us on the line from Kennesaw. Good afternoon, or good morning, I should say. Welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good.
What's going on?
Well, I have a question about whether I should refinance in my home or try to, after a couple of years, put a lump sum into the principal only. I bought the home in April of 2010, mm-hmm. and we locked in the rate at 4.875.
All right.
With a 20% down payment.
Is that a 30-year rate?
Yes, 30-year rate.
Was this your first house?
Yes, it is.
Very nice. And how long do you plan to stay in this house? Are you guys going to raise kids there, or what are you going to do?
That's what we're planning to do. I think we're gonna be here for a while, like to raise kids and all that.
That's pretty nice. Pretty nice. So if you're gonna be there for a while and you're gonna raise kids there, you'd probably want to get as low a payment as possible. And prices on mortgages have certainly changed since April of 2010. That was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So are you prepared to move to a 15-year mortgage?
Yes. I mean, that would be ideal to get a lower payment and all that.
So with a 15-year mortgage, and let's just assume for the moment, although I don't know this is true, that you still have 20% equity in the property, right? Because home prices have fallen pretty significantly in Atlanta in some neighborhoods since April of 2010. But let's just for the moment assume that you've got 20%.
Mm-hmm.
You could be looking at somewhere around 3.25% for that 15-year loan.
Mm-hmm.
You could bring it all the way down and probably to a place where your payment may not even be much more than what you're paying right now, and you'll have cut 13 years off your loan.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of significant.
Well, one thing that we have been able to do was about 2 months ago, we were able to put in like a $50,000 payment toward the principal only.
Uh huh. That's so amazing. So you did a one. Okay, so you did a one-time cash infusion. So you should easily have 20% or more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be more than that now.
Yeah. So when you refinance because you put that in, I'm almost certain that your payment will drop. And even though you'll be at a 15-year rate, you probably will have a lower payment than what you have now.
Okay.
So this is like a win-win. I mean, you're going to be in this house. Whatever the costs are, you could do a no-cost and take a 3.5% 15-year mm-hmm. loan. You'll still be ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should do it. It sounds like a nice place to bring up kids. And plus, when your kids are ready to go to college, you won't have a house payment.
Yeah,
then you're going to be paying for college with your mortgage payments,
mm-hmm.
which is awesome.
Back to when you were saying about those no-cost refis.
Uh-huh.
When you mean no-cost, is there like a bank that willing to take my refinance?
Well, the way that they do a no-cost refinance, and you should shop around for this.
Okay.
Is they're basically trading costs, the fees and costs that you would get for a slightly higher interest rate. And usually the trade-off is a quarter point.
I see.
So you can make that trade any day of the year. You
mm-hmm.
couldn't for a while back in the height of the housing crisis back in 08 and 09. They weren't doing those loans, but they are now.
Mm-hmm.
So just shop around, talk to a bunch of different places. And I'm pretty certain, especially credit unions, you sound like the kind of person who should be listening to my next hour of the show, because we're going to talk about leveraging all that cash and taking advantage of the single best time in your whole life, Truck, to buy investment property is now. And we're going to talk about that next hour, so stay tuned for that. 404-872-0750. Lisa joins us on the line from Marietta. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, good morning, Elise. First, I just want to tell you how much I enjoy your show.
Well, thanks for saying that.
I very often listen to you on my way home from church and always enjoy the information as a real estate agent here in the metro area. I've lived here all my life, and I've come from a family of builders, so I've watched it go up and down through my life, and just listening to the foreclosure issues, which are ongoing, I wanted to give a positive note out to the listeners today.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, I personally work in the Cobb County, North Fulton area.
Mm-hmm.
And after a 14-hour day yesterday, I thought, wow, I'm calling Elise today.
What did you do for 14 hours? Were you showing foreclosures?
I was showing houses, and no foreclosures were in that. Had three clients yesterday. And really right now in our better school districts, we have an extreme shortage of listings on the market, and I've sold two houses in the last week that were not listed. Talking to other agents, everyone's networking, and I currently have six buyers. It's been 5 years since I've had this situation, but I'm very blessed to have it, but literally can't find homes for people. We have such a shortage in most areas of Cobb County and North Fulton. So that's like, we're all excited now to finally see the market turn around. Now, I know we've got a long ways to go, and of course, we hear the dreaded news of more foreclosures coming on. But in a sense, it can be a blessing to get them out there, and let's get them sold and move on, for everyone, the buyers and the sellers.
You know, it's interesting, Lisa, that you say you come from a long line of real estate people, right? Builders and your real
uh-huh.
estate agent. And,
mm-hmm.
and as you know, because you've listened to the show, that my mom is a longtime realtor in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I was in Atlanta driving around last week, and it is true that in some neighborhoods, the better school district neighborhoods, we're seeing a shortage. But don't you think that there's a huge opportunity coming for the neighborhoods that are right next to the greatest school districts? Because the best school districts always recover the fastest.
Mm-hmm.
What's the opportunity as this moves block by block by block, which is traditionally how real estate reinvents itself, right? Where
right.
neighborhoods spring up that never had names before, and they get really cool signage, and suddenly it becomes an in-place to live. What do you think that, what's going on there? Are we there yet?
Well, in certain areas of Atlanta, we have been there for quite a few years. We have a lot of your older subdivisions. They literally tear down houses and build million-dollar homes. And in the million-dollar home range, probably 800 and up, we have probably a year's supply or better. If you're looking, you know, 200 to 500 in the metro area in great school districts, we maybe only have a 90-day, 120 max. I'm finding the older subdivisions are just a diamond in the rough. People are coming in renovating those houses. Remodeling contractors are snapping, you know, these foreclosures up and turning them back around and putting them on the market in 30 to 60 days and cleaning up neighborhoods. So actually, like everything, you know, it change, you know, kind of it's changing for the better here.
I'm so happy to hear that, because I think that, and we were going to talk about this next hour, how this is such, if you have the money and you have the credit history, this is such a once in a lifetime opportunity to accumulate real estate and build a fortune.
Right.
And I mean, these houses are going to go up in value.
And another thing, as sad as it is, generally in my life, I have seen as a middle-aged woman, I have seen about every 10 years growing up, our market would, you know, have a, you know, a soft spot. And I guess this last time we went 17 years here in the Georgia area. And it's always sad. No one wants to see it come. But we were to a point that every Tom, Dick, and Harry was building a house. And so, you know, it does weed out the people who really aren't good builders. And it weeds out a lot of people. Agents, all of us have, you know, had our soft years and tough times. But it really is a really nice thing to see in the Atlanta area. We have a lot of areas that are booming. You know, just to see the new home construction starting, see the trucks moving again. We are scrambling for land. All the foreclosed lots have been snapped up. They're being built on. So we still are seeing a lot of the older homes being torn down or completely gutted and being remodeled, and truly a shortage in a lot of great school districts right now.
That's actually amazing. Are you seeing a change in the families that you're working with? You've got six buyers, but have you seen the sellers who are out there starting to feel a little bit more optimistic? Because the sellers who have been calling me, are still, and maybe it's the subdivision. I know in Atlanta, it's really so particular to subdivisions. So a subdivision right next door to a subdivision could have a completely different experience. But the sellers who call the show seem completely at odds at how they're going to be able to get out of where they are. Do you feel like you're seeing a change for those sellers?
Well, I think the reason I sold two homes this week without them being on the market is this. People are hearing the negative media, and they're scared and don't know which way to go. And then I'm being called in, and other agents. I have a weekly meeting with other agents, and we're all seeing this. People say, well, what do you think? I just bought it 2 years ago. Well, I have a client that rented from me, one of my investment properties, rented from me for 2 years, turned around and said, what should I do? They're young couple, no children. What should we do? I said, you should stay in a good school district, and you'll be able to make money when you sell. Well, they both work for the same company, just got transferred to Virginia. They made $35,000 in 2 years. Now, that was a mid-200s house, but they didn't lose $100,000 like a lot of people in other counties, you know. But anyway, there are great school districts in certain counties in Georgia. And, you know, if you look at it nationally, you know, Georgia looks like they have some of the worst schools. Well, we also have some of the top schools in the nation in Cobb County.
Well, so what you're saying, though, of course, is what we've said on the show for years, what I think, what I've written in my books, what everybody has talked about, which is that always try and buy in the very best school districts that you can. And what you're telling us, which is so valuable, is that when you come out of something like the last 5 years, and you yourself said you're having a very different experience than you have had in 5 years, which is
absolutely
just so exciting. But when you're finally coming out, what's going to come back first is the best school districts.
Well, absolutely. Another thing I'm seeing with buyers, and again, this is the same thing we're talking about amongst agents. We have different buyers. For a long time, everyone wanted the biggest house, you know, the best school district, the biggest house they could get. I'm seeing that it's brought everyone down to reality. And right now, I just sold a house yesterday for someone who, you know, was scared to sell their house, and I sold it last week. They said all they wanted was a lifestyle change. They're spending about the same amount of money as I'm selling their house. they want a lifestyle change. Even your younger couples that were wanting the big houses years ago that they truly couldn't afford, you know, 100% financing or, you know, now those, it's coming around that people are wanting smaller. Builders are scaling down here. They're building smart, efficient homes, and people, I think, are moving away from the very large homes and just really wanting lifestyle, you know, good school districts, close to churches and parks. And I just really see that being a very large trend these days.
Well, I really appreciate, Lisa, you calling. Thanks so much for all the insight and for listening to the show all these years.
Thanks, Elise. Really enjoy it. Have a great day.
You too. It's 50 minutes past the hour. When we come back, Dr. Barbara Greenberg is going to join us for a few minutes to talk about how kids are feeling, the ones who are in this foreclosure crisis, who are suffering. We've been talking about a study today from the Brookings Institute. 1 in 10 children affected by foreclosure. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
5 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for listening today. We're talking about children and foreclosure in a new study from the Brookings Institute with this startling statistic. 1 in 10 children either have been or will be affected directly by the foreclosure crisis. And what that does, I'm so afraid that what that will do, what it has done to their emotional and educational stability, that we are scarring kids for life. We are ruining the next two generations. It is just, I think, terrifying. I've asked Dr. Barbara Greenberg to join us on the air. She has a book that's being published called Teenage as a Second Language, A Parent's Guide to Becoming Bilingual, being published by Adams Media. She has published it. It's out now.
Yeah.
The book, the website, your website is talkingteenage.com.
Absolutely.
Welcome to the program, Barbara.
Thank you, Elise. Thank you very much.
So we've been talking about this concept of kids and when they're faced with foreclosure, and obviously you know this better, being working with children and when their parents get depressed and anxious over something like a foreclosure, what does that do to the kids?
You know, there's a lot of very interesting information about that. If the more honest parents are with kids, the less likely kids are to get depressed. You see, what happens is they get depressed and they get anxious, not solely as a result of it being infectious from parents, but also when they don't know what's happening and they have little tidbits of information that they then piece together, and they piece together in a very creative and incorrect manner.
Well, everybody's got to rewrite the story, right?
That's
so
right.
When you're a toddler and you can sense the emotional turmoil in the air, and you don't know why, and you don't even know what a mortgage is. You certainly don't know what a foreclosure is, but you sense your parents' hysteria. To a teenage kid like my son, who's 16, who absolutely would understand if foreclosure was in the air. But each of those kids has to be able to rewrite this in a different way.
Well, this is how it works. Just like talking to teens about any sensitive subject like sex or drugs or dad has cancer or mom just lost her job, the cardinal rule is to keep your emotional level down. Even if you have to fake it and you have to kind of freak out by going into a different room after you're done talking to your child, whenever you deliver information to your child that could really rattle them, you need to deliver it in as calm a manner as possible. You need to give your kids the message that even though something unsettling has happened, we are going to be together and we are going to do the best we can. Because the message really is, life is fraught with disappointments. And the other thing I want to say, Elise, is that kids are tremendously resilient. And there's another piece of research that coincides with this that's very interesting. And this sounds kind of odd, but it's really true. Kids that really fare the poorest to experience the most depression are kids who have moved 7 times. So one move is something that kids can usually deal with. Even if it's a downward drift and they move to a neighborhood that doesn't have schools that are good, they can usually handle it fairly well. That's the good news here.
That is good if you haven't been foreclosed on 7 times. We're talking with Dr. Barbara Greenberg, a child psychologist. Her book is called Talking Teenage. Her website is called TalkingTeenage.com. Dr. Greenberg, would you stay with us for a few minutes?
I'd love to.
All right. Hang on. We're going to continue talking about this. I think Dr. Greenberg's going to give you some tips, if you're in this situation, how you can help manage your child's stress and your own through these difficult times. 404-872-0750. We'll be right back.
Anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. It is 8 minutes past the hour. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, although I have to admit I haven't checked Twitter in the last 10 minutes. ThinkGlink.com, ThinkGlink.com. Sign up for my free weekly newsletter. In it, you will get valuable, unique information you cannot get anywhere else. This week, we will put in a link to TalkingTeenage.com, Dr. Barbara Greenberg, who's on the phone with us right now. It's her website. We also will put a link to the Brookings Institute study, The Ongoing Impact of Foreclosures on Children. It is a comprehensive look at the impact of the foreclosure crisis. And what she found is 1 in 10 children has been or is at risk to be affected by foreclosure, a number that approaches 1 in 5 in some states. I mean, Nevada, it's 20% of kids. Florida, 15%. Arizona, 14%. California, 12%. Michigan, 10%. And Georgia, between 8 and 9% of all children in the state. 8 million children in total. Dr. Barbara Greenberg is a child psychologist. She's the author of Teenage as a Second Language, A Parent's Guide to Becoming Bilingual. Her website, TalkingTeenage.com. Dr. Greenberg, have you worked with specifically with children who either have gone through foreclosure or are at risk, or parents who have done that? I know you said before the break that kids could have up to 7 moves without being permanently scarred.
Right.
But it seems to me, and I know families who are in the process of going through foreclosure. There's one family that my husband, who's a real estate attorney, has been trying to help with a short sale to stave off a foreclosure for 3 years. And they are beyond stressed. I mean, a lovely, lovely couple. And when you see them, it's like they've aged 15 years. I don't know how that can't affect kids.
It has to affect the whole family and the whole family's functioning. Yeah, in fact, now in my practice, I'm dealing with a couple of families who are going through foreclosure. And it's taking its toll on the parents. And I suspect taking its toll on the kids. But I have to tell you, like in every life situation, kids take their cues from the parents because we learn the most from role modeling. So if parents can somehow, even though they are unsettled and their life will be changing, if they can somehow give their kids the message that here, these are the things that will stay the same for you, and we will do the best that we can, and we will still love you and be there for you, that is really the most important thing. You see, what I think has sort of happened in this generation is that the pendulum has swung too far, in that we protect our kids from disappointment constantly. And you and I know that life is rife with disappointment.
Really? My life has never been a disappointment. Has yours?
No, I've had some disappointments.
No, I'm just kidding, of course.
So, out of experiencing disappointment, kids and adults become more resilient. Dealing with disappointments helps people develop resiliency skills. I'm not saying that these kids aren't going to experience anxiety and some depression. Of course they can. I'm just talking about the kinds of things that you can do to minimize that depression.
So I would imagine, Dr. Greenberg, that if you are an older child, like my kids who are 14 and 16, and in our family we have a talk about everything policy.
Mm-hmm.
We don't always tell them all the details of everything, but we are very open when there are things going on in the house because we know they're sensitive and they're going to pick it up, and we allow them to ask any question. And so, for example, a year ago, we had to fire our housekeeper who had been with us for 15 years, and she had raised our children because we found that she'd been stealing us blind.
Not an uncommon story, is it?
I mean, 15 years. We couldn't even, but there was always an excuse for where things had gone.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband and I, it's not that we don't pay attention to everything. We do, but it's just like things would disappear, and then if you asked about them, they'd reappear, and you just assume they get lost in the household.
Or they get misplaced.
Yeah, I mean, of course. Maybe that laptop really is downtown. Maybe it's at your office. Maybe it's at my office. Did we leave it at Grandma's house? Wait, maybe we brought it to Aunt Phyllis's. But we sat the kids down, and we said, you can, as soon as she leaves the house and we have her key, you can ask us any questions. And they sat down.
That was really exactly what I would have advised you to do.
And they did. They asked a lot of questions, and we answered them all, even though our hearts were breaking inside. We answered all of their questions, and they asked questions for about an hour, and then they, in their mind, and you said this before the break, they kind of rewrote the story.
That's right.
That made more sense to them.
Everybody wants a narrative of what happened, and just like you and your husband did, sitting them down and allowing them to ask the questions, they were able to rewrite the story, give it a narrative, and put it in a place in their brain that made sense. If you don't allow them to ask questions, then they put the jigsaw the pieces of the puzzle together incorrectly. And kids want, at that age, kids want the information and they need it. What they learn from that also is that along with the good parts of situations come the bad parts of situations.
And even when they're so little, I mean, I don't know if you'd let your three-year-old, they would even know how to form questions, but if it were my child and I were facing foreclosure, I know what I would do is go in with the cuddle toys and the blankies, like, you know, my 14-year-old still has his... Oh, I can't say that on air. He's still... He might be listening. But, you know, I would go in and I would hold him and I would say, Michael, are you scared? What are you scared about? Well, Mommy, I'm scared. I'm not going to have my room. And, you know, we would look around the room and I would say to him, what color is the paint on your walls? It's blue. And what color is your bedspread? It's baseball stuff. And what color are your bookcases? All that would go wherever we go. And our house is where we are. It's the love that we have for each other. It's our things that we've inherited from our parents that we've built together and grown together. Wherever we put these things, it will feel like home to you.
Right. And I love that because, you see, what you're doing with younger child is you're looking for sources of comfort. But in a sense, what you're doing with the older children, by giving them the story and the narrative, you're also providing them with comfort. It's just in a more age-appropriate manner.
It's really amazing. Dr. Barbara Greenberg, her website, talkingteenage.com. The book, I'd like to read your book. I haven't obviously had a chance to, but it's called Teenage as a Second Language, A Parent's Guide to Becoming Bilingual. I know a few people who could really use that book, and their children, their daughters are only 14. They've got a few more years to go. Oh, I'm going to tell them you said that because they are just like, I think they're going to be bald soon, tearing their hair out.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Greenberg, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. We have 16 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Alice joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Lalise. I wanted to make a comment about the children.
Mm-hmm.
I think that maybe this is a blessing in disguise because my parents grew up during the Great Depression.
Uh-huh.
And believe
me, was that hard? How old were you during the Great Depression?
I wasn't even born.
Oh, okay. They grew up, right. I'm sorry, I misheard you, and I thought you said you grew up during the Great Depression.
That would
make you sort of old now, but whatever. Go ahead.
Anyway, and I grew up knowing that you benefited when you worked. The whole family. I will say one thing, we certainly have our hard times together, but all of the siblings knew that you have to work.
Mm-hmm.
And they were adamant that you don't buy anything unless you have money in your pocket to pay for it.
So a world of cash.
And finally my mother had to go and open some charge accounts so that they'd have a credit rating.
Uh-huh.
And she would use them, and then the next day she'd send them a check.
Pay them off. You know, all of that is really fabulous money management, and they're all great tools. They're tools that I've used for years, and as you know, if you've listened to the show, I recommend them highly. The problem that people have run into, and I'm sure you've seen this with the people that you love, because it has affected everyone, is that the vast majority of people in foreclosure today or facing foreclosure weren't the people who did the pay option arms and who weren't people who could bought a $500,000 house on $550,000 in income. Those people have been out of the system for a long time. The vast number of people were people like you and me who had good jobs, put that 20% down payment on their house, could well afford their mortgage, and then somebody got sick, somebody lost a job, sometimes both somebody lost a job. And that it was had nothing to do with them. Their companies laid off overnight 10,000 people. Their number came up. And
yeah,
in the depths of the recession, that's different.
But I also think that because it was the great generation that fought the Second World War, and it was the great generation that came home from the war and built businesses, and they knew they could do this because they knew that if they worked hard and they had good business practices, they would do it. And I think our society is full of too many people with entitlement mentality. And these are affected too. You know, they're the ones that bought the $500,000 house on a $50,000 a year mortgage.
There are some of those people out there, Alice, but I have to say the people who call this show week in and week out are the people that were the great generation. They were the ones who came home and they built. But the rules have changed. The rules have changed in business today, and it's no longer enough, I don't think, to just play by the rules. It doesn't work anymore quite the same way. You have to do other things, and you can be thrifty, and you can pay in cash, and you can maintain a stellar credit rating. And the problem with the FICO score is it doesn't tell you what's going to happen to that family the day after they lose their job. And then they run through over the next 6 months all of their savings, and then the 6 months after that, they cash out their 401k. And after that, there's nothing left. And now they're facing year two of no job, with no savings and no 401k, and now they're facing foreclosure because people have been unemployed. The participation rate, the labor participation rate, is so much lower now than it was. And those are millions of jobs that have gone away. And so you can play by the rules every single day. But if there isn't a job, there isn't a job. And if there isn't a job, as I said at the top of the show today, real estate is going to be directly affected. 404-872-0750, 20 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show. Give us a call, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
6 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elyse Glink. Thanks for listening today. Coming up after news, we're going to talk about why this is, bar none, the best time for probably the next, I want to say 50 years, to buy real estate and start building a real estate empire that's going to make you rich. Now, you know that I have been saying every year over the last 4 years that the times are getting better and better and better to buy foreclosures. But last week's $26 billion foreclosure settlement means that now that's the watershed moment. You're all waiting to hear that was it. And as we heard from Lisa, there is just an amazing amount of interest right now in certain price ranges, in certain neighborhoods, but it's interesting. It's not everywhere. So you have to know where to go, and you have to know what to look for, and you have to be willing to put up with the baloney sometimes that goes with being a landlord. It's never going to not be work, right? I mean, they call it work for a reason, right? It's not always as much fun. But if you are intent on using your good credit, the cash you have available, and some know-how in the home repair business, and I don't mean that you have to know how to put on a room addition. I mean taking a paintbrush and a can of paint and fixing it up a little bit, giving it a fresh coat of paint. If you're willing to put in a little bit of what they called on the PBS show This Old House, a little bit of that old sweat equity, I think there are riches in store for you. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to take some calls coming up next. I'm Elise Glink, 27 minutes past the hour on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk, WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk, WSB.
6 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. So glad you could join us today. 404-872-0750. Online all the time. ThinkGlink.com. ThinkGlink.com. Sign up for our free weekly newsletter. Get amazing, valuable information that you cannot get anywhere else. It's on every single page on the homepage. It's like a little bar over on the right. You enter in your email address and you automatically get signed up. ThinkGlink.com. Mike joins us on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. How are you doing?
I'm all right. What can I do for you today?
Well, I'm looking for mortgage options. I purchased my own house in a divorce, and it was part of a cash out. I didn't get the cash, and of course now the value of the house is a lot less than it appraised for when I purchased it.
When did you buy the house?
It's probably almost 4 years ago.
Okay, so pretty much at the height of the market.
Right before everything changed. It appraised for $299, and now it's coming in around $260. And I'm not under. I only bought it for $225. So now, of course, I still need about $7,000 to get the equity the mortgage lender says I have to have because of the laws of having had cash out before, even though I didn't get the cash.
Right.
So I've tried with the HARP a couple of times, and it's just not been any opportunity in there at all. And like you mentioned in your last segment, been hit hard by the recession. So I'm on several jobs, but, you know, I'm still in the black, still making the mortgage, but everything's very, very tight and no opportunity to come up with the extra cash in this economy.
So what are you trying to do, just lower your payments so that you can stay in this house?
Trying to get a better interest rate, and even though I have equity in the home, I don't have the percentage necessary because of the cash out mortgage that I'm currently in.
Have you tried an FHA refinance?
No, I have to admit I haven't asked for that or gone to another mortgage lender for that.
I think it's time to start shopping around. I mean, if you have equity in the property, and I'm not saying that FHA loans are cheap, right? They're not cheap. But if you have equity, at least 3 or 5% equity in the house, that may be an option. But here's the thing. You may not qualify for an FHA refinance because there are now some very strict rules about how much money you have to save every month for the government to consider that to be a worthwhile refinance. So you might feel, if I can save $50 a month, I'm in good shape. But the government might say, if you can't save $200 a month, we're not even doing it.
Well, the thing I've learned about the laws in Texas is I have to have 30% or more equity because of the cash out situation. So that's what's been causing me to not be able to refinance it. Even though I owe less than what the house appraises for, I only owe probably $217. It appraises for $260, but it had appraised at $299 when I first bought it. But I don't have the 30%, you know, to be able to pull off that refinance. The state law is what I'm told.
Is there, if that is state law, and to be honest, I don't know what state law is in Texas, but most mortgage companies are regulated by state law, not federal law. But there are some federal lenders out there that claim to not to be exempt from that, and that would be Bank of America, Chase, Wells Fargo. Have you tried any of the big banks?
Yeah, I'm with Chase now, and they've not been able to help me. They say no.
I don't know that I have an answer for you. You can try a few more lenders and have the conversation and see. When did you do the cash out refinance?
Like I said, when I first bought it four years ago.
Bought it
for myself 4 years ago. And it's part of a divorce, but I didn't get the cash as part of the divorce.
Right.
But it's considered.
It is considered a cash out refinance.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can help you. I wish I could help you.
That's what I'm hearing. Again, I'm not behind in the payments, and I can make it. But again, like you mentioned in your last segment, because of the economy, of course, my income is down. I'm on multiple jobs, you know, just from the economy.
That must be so hard for you. That must be so hard. How are you holding up?
I'm right on the edge. We're holding up fine. I mean, but we're right on the edge. We make the payment every month, but there's little or no extra cash for anything. And we've worked very hard to pay off debt. Any tax returns or bonuses that I get go down. Debt's paid off to less than $5,000.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But it's a good size. We're a good sized family, and we enjoy the house. I could sell it, take a little bit of a loss, and move on, but we love the house, and we love the area. But I could theoretically move across the street, but I can't refinance my house.
I think you should think about making that tough choice. There are a lot of foreclosures in Texas. Maybe if you could sell your house, and you still have some cash, you could move across the street and buy the same neighborhood. Maybe it's not quite as fixed up as your house, but maybe you'd pay $170 for it. You know, I mean, maybe there's a different kind of an option that you should be considering. Because if state law is stupid enough to prevent somebody like you from being able to qualify for a refinance when you've got all that equity in the property, I mean, that's stupid state law in my mind.
Yeah. Well, we've got the equity. We've got good credit. I can call the bank and get a loan for anything we pretty much want in a flash on the same day. We haven't had any problems.
I mean, you guys are the ideal borrowers.
We're not behind.
So what about selling? You know, could you sell your house? Could you sell it and buy something for $170,000 or $200,000 across the street and pocket the difference and move and, you know, buy a different house?
Yeah, but again, I think when the economy comes back, it'll be back up around $299,000 or more again. Could be over $300,000.
So. But the house across the street would get there too.
Sure would.
And you'd start at a lower point with the mortgage that's at, what's your interest rate now?
About 6.25%.
Okay, so you could trade 6.25% for a 3.25%. That's 3 percentage points different. 3.25%, 15-year loan on a less expensive house with 20% down, not 30% down. Put some cash in the bank, pay off the extra $5,000, and you're living in the same neighborhood and a house that's still going to appreciate. I don't know. That seems like a perfectly interesting opportunity.
I could, if I can come up with the $7,000, I could probably refinance it and stay here.
Absolutely.
So.
But I'm saying if you can't come up with that, I mean, I guess you could. You could maybe borrow against a 401k temporarily and then pay yourself back. Could you do that?
That's a consideration, yes.
I mean, if you borrow and you don't withdraw, you don't pay the taxes and the penalty, You still have to pay yourself back with interest, but it sounds like you're able to pay off debt with interest. I mean, yeah, if you had realized you only needed $7,000 to be able to achieve what you wanted, you might not have paid down your debt quite as quickly.
It would cost us half that much in closing costs. Although it could be rolled into the mortgage, it still would be spending the money. So
that's the refinance.
To refinance and or to move. So
it's going
to
cost
halfway,
you that either.
I'm halfway there.
Yeah, but it costs you that anyway.
Yeah, I'm halfway there.
Right. So I think you have some different options, but you know the biggest concern I have, Mike, is when you tell me that you're living right on the edge. When you tell me, I can hear it in your voice, that you're probably staying up at night, and you're thinking about this, and you're going over all the numbers. If you're anything like my husband, Sam, it's like, what are you doing, honey? I'm staring at the numbers in the ceiling, trying to make it all work out. And that's not a place you want to live for too long. So, you know, there are some other options for you. And moving to a house across the street, you know, literally or down the hall or down the way or whatever, in the same neighborhood with the same great schools, is not the worst opportunity. In fact, I was going to this hour talk about that this is the best time to go out and buy something. I mean, Lisa in Atlanta, you probably heard her talk about how she in certain price ranges, you're in that price range. She doesn't even have houses. She could sell your house in a minute if you were in Atlanta. And you're in Texas, so she can't. But Texas has always had a stronger real estate market than many other states. It's still doing pretty well. You could sell and you could move. It's a pain in the butt, for sure. And it's not without its costs. But imagine if you buy in at $200,000 and you sell at $260,000, or you sell at $240,000 and you buy at $200,000. And think about all the equity you now have, and what you only need is 20% to get that low, low interest rate. And now you start saving hand over fist. There are other ways to slice this cake. You just have to see it as a cake. Let me know what happens, Mike. 46 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. LaVon joins us on the line from Riverdale. Hi, LaVon.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm just calling. I went through a divorce, and my hours were lowered on my job.
I'm sorry.
And I still had the same expenses. And what I had to do was I had to, in order to not lose my house, I had to rent out rooms in my house. My daughter didn't like it too much, but we made it through it. And when my daughter graduated high school, I sold the house. I moved to Riverdale, Georgia from Virginia, bought a house, paid cash for it, and I'm still doing well.
You know, it's
people have to use alternative methods. It's not always about refinancing. And one thing my mother always taught me, she says, I don't care what is going on in your life. If you have to refinance your house, you refinance your house to lower the interest rate only. You do not take money out of your house unless you plan on increasing the value or taking money out to purchase another piece of property. You never take money out to pay off bills. You never take money out just for the sake of taking money out. It's always to increase value in something.
I love those messages.
And if people would stop trying to use their house as a piggy bank, because it's not. It's the same way the government is working. They're trying to use taxpayers' money as piggy banks. That's not what it's about. It's about planning for your future. Your house is your future. If you keep taking money out, there will be nothing there for your future.
How did you deal with your daughter not liking it? How did you comfort her so that she would feel like she was part of the solution, not part of the problem?
We would sit down, because my other two children were off in college. We would all sit down together, and we would go over, okay, this person came. If you don't like them, they're out. If you do like, and we found that right down the street from where I lived in Chesapeake, there was a flight school. And what we did is we took flight students in, students from all over the country and all over the world. I had students from Africa, students from Asia, students from China, students from Japan, a bunch of students from India that would come in at 3 months at a time. And they would stay. And I had three bedrooms that were not being used. My daughter had her bedroom. We used my bathroom. And I had my master bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And the three students would always use the other bathroom. And she had a stay. And my other daughter, who was in law school at the time, had a stay because she came home. And
So you empowered your children, your daughters, you empowered them, and they helped design the solution to this incredible problem.
Well, I already told them what the solution was. They didn't like it. I said, either
no, but they designed, but they, you gave them veto power. I mean, that's a
yes.
huge amount of responsibility that you laid at their feet and said, help me make a great decision.
Right. And we had a couple of situations where people got in there and they just weren't a right fit. And I talked to my daughters and I'm like, when do you want, and they were the ones that said, okay, it's time to evict.
Yeah. Well, they, kids, listen, kids know. We had Dr. Barbara Greenberg on earlier. She's like, kids know when there's trouble. And if you don't invite
right.
them to the table to have a talk about a solution and invite them to be part of the solution, it causes all kinds of long-term problems and long-term
yes,
damage. And it sounds like your children have done great.
Yes, they have. And my last daughter is in college now. I sold right after she entered college.
That's fantastic.
Because she said she was tired of roommates, and if she was going to have roommates, she was going to have roommates. She liked that she was moving out. And I said, fine, and I don't need to keep the house. And I sold the house.
I love, though, that you paid cash for the new house. And I love that your mother passed on these incredible lessons to you, LaVon, because so few people get parents who have the kind of money sense, money common sense, that your mother clearly did. And she sounds like she just laid it out for you. I'm reminded of my husband's late aunt, Aunt Judy, who we loved very, very much. And she also had a big bedroom, also was divorced, had four daughters. And as they moved out, she rented out all of their rooms. And she ran a bed and breakfast for years. Had long-term clients who came and would stay for a month or two at a time when work and came back. And that was how she lived. And she did fine. And it worked out great. Thank you for sharing that story. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glenk. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at ThinkGlenk.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glenk, 404-872-0750. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter, ThinkGlenk.com. You get original, cool content that you cannot get anywhere else in the ThinkGlenk community. Patrick joins us on the line from Cumming. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, Elise.
What's going on today?
Well, I would like to get rid of a rental house that I have, and I'd like to really give it to my wife's parents, but I'm trying to avoid paying capital gains tax on it too much.
Okay, so here's the thing. How much do you think the house is worth?
Well, we had it appraised not too long ago, and I think it probably go for around $200,000.
And what'd you pay for it?
$175,000.
Okay, so that's not too much. And how much depreciation do you have in? Because you have to when you sell this, you have to recapture the depreciation.
Right, and that's kind of the issue. We kind of looked at the adjusted basis after depreciation because we lived in it and we went to rental on it in 2003.
Uh huh. So about 9 years.
The adjusted basis is about 128.07.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're going to, I don't know any way to get out of that other than doing a 1031 tax-free exchange.
Okay.
Right, where you would trade this property for another rental property.
Right.
And what her parents do with it is its own thing. So you have to think about whether you want to buy another rental property and how they would want, and you would want to deal with, you know, having them buy it and what they would buy it for. If you don't want to buy another rental property, then you're going to get stuck with a big tax bill.
Right. And, you know, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is.
Have you talked to an accountant or an enrolled agent yet? Had it sort of run it through your taxes to kind of see where you're going to end up?
Yeah, we spoke with our accountant about it. And he suggested that if we had it appraised and it appraised for much lower, that we might be able to avoid the taxes. Because the thing is, we'd like just to for my in-laws to have it without them paying us anything for it.
Right. So you do want to give it. I have to jump in because we're running out of time. But you do want to give it as a gift. You're going to need some pretty fancy tax planning around that. And you and your wife could give them, depending on what it appraises for, you can give them, you know, a gift at $13,000 apiece or $26,000 a year. And so over a number of years, you can just give them the house. But I don't have the time to go through all of that. You need to talk to an estate attorney who can get a trust set up and put it where it needs to go. 59 minutes now at News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thank you for a great show. I guess next week we're going to talk about how this is the most amazing opportunity ever to buy rental real estate and build a fortune. So we'll do that next week. Stay tuned. Adam Goldfein is next. Have a great afternoon. Bye.